The Hard Shoulder on News Talk.
With the all-new Nissan Juke. The coupe crossover by Nissan. Nissan. Innovation that excites.
Evening, you're listening to News Talk. Now, it's that time of the week when Tom Dunn joins us to talk about the week in music. First up, though, have a listen to this. Blur there, of course, and Park Life. Now, in the last issue, or the last issue of the iconic music magazine, Q, is due to be published this week. And today, in fact, I think it's out. Tom, you've talked with Ivan about this before, but this week you want to actually talk about whether this is actually the end of print music journalism forever and as we know it.
Yes, I know it sounds a little bit dramatic, and I picked up the last copy of Q yesterday. I went to the last corner shop in Dunleary, which is where I live, and I got the last Q in the last corner shop and brought it home. And would you believe it's a best of? Would you believe that their last ever magazine is just a best of previous issues, which, well, I have to say says an awful lot about
Q. Were they not famous for doing that, though? Best of the year, best albums ever, best album covers ever. That was kind of one of the staples that they introduced.
Yeah, I think it was one of the staples they fell into. Yeah. I think when they started doing it first, it was quite fresh. And they were a very entertaining magazine. One of their favourite things were picking bands where one of the members looked like he doesn't belong in the band. and he's asking the others, do I have to wear this?
Which one of the happens would it have been, do you think?
That would have been Ray.
No, listen, I, you know, music magazines have been a staple of my life, all my adult life, since I was about 14 or 15. Back in those days, they were called the Inkies. So you would get Melody Maker and the NME. And then when Sounds came along, you'd get the three of them. Then when it went to the glossy magazines, my staples were Q, Mojo, and I still bought one of the Inkies while I could, NME, and of course Hot Press, which I used to thankfully get free because of I was out in RDE. But I would have bought every issue of them for, oh God, I don't know, 10, 15, 20, 25 years?
Yeah, as I was looking into it, I think 1952, the NME started to introduce charts.
And well, no, I wasn't buying them back then.
I'm just trying to put the headstone together for it, to be completely honest. Born 1952, died 2020. So when they started doing charts, general readers started to get more involved. And then when the 60s kicked off, people just couldn't get enough about music. If you really want to take the big look on this, it's in the 60s, young people started writing their own music. The Beatles and the Stones started speaking for their generation. And then music writers started writing about that. And that was the golden era. And magazines like Rolling Stone came along. And they had a real counterculture coolness to them. And people wanted to be part of it. And you'd read interviews with politicians, but you wanted to read the one in the Rolling Stone because it was the one where he's going to be asked about drug use and other stuff. It was the real stuff. So that was the golden age. I think when Q came into it, it was kind of a little bit past the golden age. But it was where people just wanted to read about music, older bands. They didn't really mind. But it was still hugely successful because we were rebuying their back catalogues. But it's come to an end. The internet has just let the air out of the balloon. It's as simple as that. You can get the music for free. You can read about it for free. It's just gone. So the shops where the magazines would have been are gone. The record companies who would have given them the CDs are gone. It's just the industry has changed. It's now all online. It's a very different world. But that was, Q is more or less the last big magazine standing. And the only ones that are left now are very specialist, like Guitar Player. They're for people who are actually still in the industry. So, I think it's a big moment. I think the end of Q is literally, that's it on the headstone. Print music, 52 to 2020. It died at 68.
Well, it also goes hand in hand with what has happened with the pandemic, Tom, which is that, you know, the gig economy is it's on its knees. Actually, it's not on its knees. It's face down in the gutter at this stage. And, you know, obviously you're a musician. I suppose 50 or 60% of my friends and circle are musicians, actors, people in it, either people on stage or the people backstage making things good for them. And a lot of them have said to me they don't know whether they'll ever work again.
I really hope, I know the darkest hours before dawn and all that, I really hope that proves not to be true and that it goes away, COVID-19, as quickly as it came in. At the moment, I think there's an awful lot of fear in the industry because people do feel that and you're looking and thinking, when are you going to be in a sweaty venue? Because could there be anything more non-social distancing than being at a gig? and it's what makes it
I don't
so
know if
special.
You saw, Tom, there was a stat there last week or the week before, 12,000 weddings cancelled. And I was just thinking, that's 12,000 bands.
Yeah.
Wedding ban, four people, that's 48,000 guys who didn't get a payday that day. And if they're a pro or semi-pro, they probably had, you know, two pub gigs or something like that as well. So that multiply that by three. So now you're up to 150,000 every week for 5 months. That's
And many, many, many of them will have mortgages and families and everything else, and will be in a position where either the government or their mortgage people may be saying, is there anything else you can work at? And that really could be the end for so many bands. So it's a very worrying time.
Okay, let's change tack and bring a bit of optimism into it. Your album of the week. Here's a clip. You're listening to News Talk. I'm here with Tom Dunn talking about musical events and happenings and things of note in the last week. Now, that was your album of the week, and it is Taylor Swift, Folklore. First and foremost, are you a Tay-Tay fan, Tom?
No, I was trying to gauge your reaction to see what you're going to say. Tom Dunn, are you honestly telling me you like Taylor Swift? No, you seem to be taking it fine. No, I haven't been a fan. The only time she ever crossed my radar was when Ryan Adams, the bold boy, did an entire one of her albums, and I thought it was brilliant. I thought what it brought to Ryan Adams were much more focused songs than his own songs, simpler, more focused songs, and I thought it worked brilliantly. So I started paying attention to her at that point, and then when I heard on this album, Aaron Dessner of The National is involved in pretty much all the music, I was just intrigued. So I went for a very long walk with the dog, and I listened to it from beginning to end, and I came away from it thinking, she really is a great songwriter. You can't take it away from her. Great hooks, great lyrics, great choruses, great ideas. She has it all. There's no question about that. Did I come away from it loving it and want to hear it again? Not so much, to be honest. I found myself more admiring it and respecting it. I didn't really get excited by it. But on a songwriter basis, wow, she has the chops. No question.
Yeah. Look, she's not aimed at me. It wouldn't necessarily be my cup of tea. Although, you know, the songs are, they're really, really well-crafted pop country tunes. I watched the documentary on Netflix, and my admiration and respect for her went up. Not necessarily, you know, it's obvious she's a great performer. It's obvious she's a really gifted songwriter. But the political stances that she took in her own home state of Tennessee as she was growing up, I thought, right, this girl's got gumption. She's got Lee Roddy. And, you know, for somebody like her coming from her background, she did something that, you know, was neither popular nor profitable with the people who run the business. And I thought, fair play to you, girl.
Fair play.
I was really interested to hear. Now, here's the thing. When you see somebody like Aaron Dessner of The National or Bon Iver getting involved with her, these guys, you can't get any more credible or have any more respect than these people. They're kind of indie godfathers or alternative godfathers. So they rate her. So that says
a lot,
doesn't it?
They do. Oh, do you know what, though? I think she is using them. That's the word I'll use for it. The way Madonna would have used producers like Mirway back in the day.
Mm.
They're great in their own rights. But I have to say, being no doubt who the talent is here, it's Taylor Swift. And
well, are they not using her, Tom? I mean, let's face it. A national album will sell 500,000 copies, which is nice business. She'll sell 5 million. So that's a two way street, isn't it?
Yeah, those lads are in it strictly.
They're in it for the art, are they?
They're not breadheads. No time wasters. No breadheads was in the ads when they were looking for it. They wouldn't be interested in any of that kind of stuff. Money goes right by them.
Artists. It's very hard for any artist to grow up in public, and there'll be huge financial and commercial pressures on her not to do this, to trot out the same old stuff. So it's a brave move. It's to be applauded. And in your opinion, the music is really good.
That's really good. Yeah,
okay.
Absolutely.
Sad stories. People that we've lost this week, and here's somebody who was huge, loomed very large for me when I was listening to music, first of all, Peter Green.
And I need a good woman to make me feel like a good man should. I don't say I'm a good man, oh, but I would be if I could.
Now, Peter Green, and Peter Green's Fleetwood Mac, as it was known back then, was he much of an influence for you, or was he kind of the generation before, Tom?
I have to tell my story. When we formed our very, very first band, The End, I was the bass player, and we only did one gig, and the song that we did during the gig was Albatross. And I don't know if you know Albatross, but there's only two notes on the bass on it. And at the end of it, I was so bad, I was fired. and only allowed back into the band if I agreed to be the singer. And that is how I became the singer. So Peter Green has played a part in my downfall.
Well, for anybody, musicians of that generation, Albatross was a rite of passage in terms of songs you had to learn, songs that had to be in the set.
Yeah, and very simple stuff. Mm. But I think what is really beautiful about it is his playing. There's a gentle, delicate quality to his playing, which I think was inherent in the man himself. And it was really beautiful to listen to. He had extreme mental health problems from 1970 onwards. He left the band in 1970 and was a very delicate flower for his entire life. But he was a really beautiful player. And I was very taken by how all the members of Fleetwood Mac got together to pay tribute to him. None of them lost sight of the fact that he was the one who started them on that road to rumours and world domination and everything that came with it. So,
well, Albatross, Man of the World, Oh Well, and my favourite, Green Man Alishi, all songs written 45 years ago and still getting played regularly. So he's left a hell of a legacy, hasn't he? Also, Primal Scream have lost a member. Not somebody I was familiar with, although I know the band, obviously. Denise Johnson?
Yeah, you wouldn't be familiar with her, but she is absolutely huge. She was on Primal Scream. When Primal Scream had that breakthrough album with Andrew Weatherall producing it, Lotus, Screamadelica, the producer, Andy Weatherall, was very clear in his view that Bobby Gillespie was not a great singer, and particularly not a great singer in the dance world. So they went looking for a vocalist, and the vocalist they found was Denise Johnson, and she makes those tracks. So a lot of the big hits in that album were her singing. Afterwards, she sang with various different people.
Pet Shop Boys, New Order.
Yeah. Johnny Marr, who is mad about her. Johnny Marr said she gold-plated any song that she sang on. I did a little tribute to her on Tuesday night, and her voice is just remarkable. You know the vocalist on Gimme Shelter? You know the girl part in Gimme
Mary
Shelter?
Mary Clayton.
Yeah, she had that quality. She had that just electric quality when she came in. So just on the verge of releasing a solo album, I presume that will still go ahead. But yes, a very sad loss.
Now, finally, your tip of the week. Let's take a listen.
Put my pants through the wash. That keeps my cardio steady. And I've been doing that gym shit. Thought I told you already. Must have been in a dream. I'm losing track of my thoughts. Put my pants back on.
It's News Talk. I'm on with Tom Dunn talking about music. And that's his tip of the week. Who is that, Tom?
That's Kojak, one of the emerging new talents in Ireland. And I'll tell you why I'm playing that.
He's Irish.
I'm giving over.
They're
he
Irish.
Is indeed, yes. Yeah,
oh, wow.
Absolutely. I'm giving over the show next week. I'm actually away and I'm recording this. This is going to be a pre-recorded thing. Tower Records put together their top 70 Irish albums of all time. And I was really taken by it. If you go into a bookshop sometimes, you'll see staff picks. And they're often really great. But going to a record shop where all they do all day is listen to music and get their staff picks. And I think you're on to a winner. So I was really taken by the top 70. It's bands. I'll throw a few names past to see if you can remember them. Mellow Candle.
No.
No. Stano.
Yes.
Michael O'Shea.
Yes.
Let Us Whisper.
No.
Yeah, you see, these are a few. They found stuff off the
beaten path. Well, Kojak is the one that's sticking in my brain. Now I'm going to check that out straight away. Listen, thank you very much. It's lovely to talk to you. We don't talk about music.
That's all next week. Don't miss it.
We will not. Tom Dunn there. Thank you very much.